Hey Sivan, Erev Chag Shavuos, Rabbi Nachman Seltzer, Ants, The Secret Ambition.
I was here a few months ago. It was a pleasure being over here, so Baruch Hashem, happy to be back. And here we go. Rabbeinu Yoyin and Shai Tshuva. The Sefer Rabbeinu Yoyin and Shai Tshuva has four parts. So the first, second, and fourth chalakim of the Sefer deal with the name of the Sefer, the idea of Tshuva. It's not such a surprise, being that the Sefer is called Shai Tshuva, and it deals with Tshuva. The third chalak of the Sefer, however, is completely different. Instead of dealing with the ostensible topic of the Sefer, Rabbeinu Yoyin goes into the chiyuvim of mitzvahs asei and mitzvahs lois asei, stating a venerable Sefer HaMitzvahs into what was supposed to be a Sefer dealing with Tshuva. The question, of course, is why? Why is Rabbeinu Yoyin sticking into the middle of the Sefer HaTshuva, mitzvah say, mitzvah lois say, ma kesha, what does it do with it? Let's talk about ants, okay? So, the life of an ant, the glory, the thought processes, the teamwork, the non-stop action. So, Shlomo HaMelech HaMishle, Leich Elen HaMalav HaKeim, go to the ant, study its ways and become wise. What are we supposed to learn from the habits of an ant? Well, firstly, Chazal tell us there are many, many things we can learn from different animals. Everybody, if you're going to ask people, what should we learn from animals, I ask you right now. What are the things we could have, if we did not have the Torah to teach us things, what could have we learned from other animals? That's the first one everybody says. Three is from a cat. Anything else?
Teamwork
from?
Work is a
team.
All animals, especially pigs.
Oh. So we can learn chutzpah from a leopard and industriousness from the ever-busy ant. So let's think of for a second the daily schedule of an ant. So this is all coming out of Medrash Rabbah. He explains in detail how the life of an ant works. He says, the daily schedule. He rises early in the morning. He goes out and looks for food. He schleps it back to his house. Okay, so first things first. The ant's mission statement is a very simple one. Get food, bring it back to the house. Stage two, the storing process. Where to store the goods, okay? So this is what Medrash Rabbah says. The ant arrives home with a delicious kernel of wheat on his shoulder. So now the question is like this. How many stories do you think an ant has in a typical ant home? How many stories do you think there are? What? Well, how many? No. Typical ant home, how many stories? Three stories, the typical ant home. Where does he store his wheat kernel? He's just come home, schlepping a wheat kernel bigger than him.
Third story.
You say third story. Anybody else?
Two and one.
Two and one. So, says the Medrash Rabbah, the problem with the third story, if you put it on the top floor, which is right beneath the ground, the roofer, the roofing industry in the ant world has yet to be developed, and rain might come in and ruin the wheat. So the ant doesn't put it on the top floor. He doesn't put it on the bottom floor because water might come up from the ground and ruin.
I know the mitzvah.
There's a smart man in the back of the room. So he puts it into the middle level number two. Now the question the ant has is as follows. How much food should I gather? There's a question facing every ant. This question comes up every day. So let's examine this scientifically. How long can an ant possibly live for?
6 months.
That is the maximum. Why?
He doesn't have bones.
He doesn't have bones. So if an ant goes through life and lives through the maximum, he doesn't get stepped on, nobody uses a magnifying glass to burn him, he makes it through life. The most he can live for is 6 months. So, how much, this is the question, how much food, how many wheat kernels does an ant need to survive for a lifespan of 6 months, which is the maximum lifespan he can have? How much can he... If he lives the longest he can, 120 years in an ant's life, how much can he consume? Tell us, Medrash Rabbah, not more than a kernel and a half. This is the maximum.
For 6 months.
He can't eat more. He will not physically be able to eat more than a kernel and a half. He can live well for his entire life on a kernel and a half. Does an ant, in fact, store a kernel and a half? He does not. He does not content himself with such a minute amount of kernels. Instead, the Medrash tells us the ant gathers a veritable feast for the eyes and spirit of wheat and barley and lentils. And if the ant were to live, says the Medrash, for 6,000 years, you make the calculations how much he'll need, and the number is nowhere close to what he actually gathers. The question is why? Why does the ant do this? Oh, so we know that the animals kill what they need and no more. Right? They usually eat what they need. So the ant, on the other hand, he stores so much that if he lives forever, before we get to the mindset of the ant, here's another question. In the Medrash Tanchuma, Medrash Tanchuma says, we hear an accusation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has on the Jewish people. Hashem is a taina on Klal Yisrael. Hashem says to us, sure you oyver HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sure you serve me, but everything you do for me is in response to something that I do for you. I give you a house, so you put up a mezuzah. I give you money, so you take ma'aser. And Hashem says, you know what? I'm not so happy with that. I want you to be proactive. I want you to do for me, to come towards me, not response. So the question that everybody asks is, what do you mean? Obviously, we can only do in response. If we have a house, we put up a mezuzah. What do you want from us? We're going to put up a mezuzah without a house. You need a house to put up a mezuzah. That's the question everybody asks. So we have three questions over here. Question number one, Rabbeinu Yoyinah, Shai Tshuva, why is he putting in a section three that has nothing to do with the Sefer? Question number two, what on earth is the Ant thinking? Question number three, the Medrash Tanchuma, what does Hashem want? He's asking us to be proactive in a matzav that is not capable. We have nothing to do over here. We're only acting in response to HaKadosh Baruch. So now we're going to digress a little bit, and we're going to come back to this very soon. Shir HaShirim discusses the love between a man and his wife as the yardstick to measure our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch. As much as the Torah focuses on Ahava, it also mentions divorce as a way of life. As a part of life. It's chelik. It's a chelik of chayim. And the Torah talks about every single thing in life. So the Mishnah Gittin discusses the different reasons why a person is allowed to divorce his wife. Right? And we have three shitas. Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rabbi Akiva. What's the obvious reason? The first obvious reason? Anybody care to speak up? The first of you in the back. You must have something to say. First. So what's the reason? No. Beis Shammai. What does he say? What?
Well,
one
it's not
the Zivrim. No. Beis Shammai says a specific, a very clear reason. Oh, there, it's a rise. So Shammai says if there's an immorality issue, he divorces her. That's the first thing that Beis Shammai, and that's the only thing in this Mishnah Gittin that actually on the surface makes sense. Because Beis Hillel goes in a completely different direction, and he says something which you would never imagine, not just because it doesn't make sense, but because it's coming from Beis Hillel, of all people. Very good. So Beis Hillel comes along and says, a person can divorce his wife over something slightly less serious than a rayas if she burns his soup or any meal for that matter. These are grounds for divorce, says Beis Hillel. Now, okay, this is very strange, because Beis Hillel is the man who said to the person standing on 1 foot, and here he's telling you, if she burns your soup, that's it, it's all over. Oh, it reminds me of the Muslims, lahavdil. And the way it works in Islam is that if a person's wife does something he doesn't like, he says to her three times, get out of my house, get out of my house, get out of my house. It's all over. I remember reading a story once about a couple that he came home, he was all upset, and she made him food, and he said to her, do it quicker, and she wasn't able to do it quicker, and he said to her, that's it, get out of my house, get out of my house, get out of my house, right? And then afterwards he woke up, he's like, what did I do? You know, Eshes Neurai, what am I doing here? So he goes to the Rav, to the Qadi, the Arab Rav, he goes to him, he says, what should I do? The Rav says, I don't know what to tell you, you divorced your wife, that's it, it's all over. What she did, so they went to the Rav. And the Rav says, what were you doing? He gave a tonight to his divorce. He said, if by the time I finish eating this cookie that I'm eating, you don't bring me whatever it is, then you're divorced. So the Rav said, let's go home and take a look at the cookie. It was a very dry cookie. And the Rav said, there's still crumbs on the table. So you never finished it. See, tonight was never in Mekuyim. So it's Lamafreya, it's okay, you're still married. The Qadi was very impressed. He said, ah, Valdik, look at this, Jewish people. Anyway, the point is, that over there, yeah, we throw them out three times and it's over. But Beis Hillel, for Beis Hillel to say, burn the soup, and that's it. It's very strange. But then we get to the next shita, and it's even more strange. Rabbi Akiva comes along, and he says what? Oh, Rabbi Akiva says that if he finds a nicer woman, somebody he thinks is more attractive. Very strange. This is a very difficult mission to understand. But Hillel, whose eternally linked adage is one of loving peace, how could such a house of thought even suggest that burning soup is a good enough reason to undo the cord? And Rabbi Akiva, who's famously said, Shaliv, Shalchem, Shalai, yours and mine is hers. How could he say you get divorced if you find a lovelier woman? It doesn't make any sense. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, he said over his story, he said, a famous story he used to love saying over about a couple that the wife passed away, an older couple, and he went to live with his children. And there he is, and the daughter-in-law wanted her father-in-law to feel at home, so she took her mother-in-law's box of recipes into the house, and she started cooking him every day a different recipe, the thing he's used to. And every day she cooks him, and every day she comes over, she says to him, "Ooh, Abba, Daddy, is it good?" He says, it's good, but it's not as good as Mommy used to make. Every day the same thing. And one day she's cooking him something, and she goes out, and she comes back, and it burns. And she comes over, she says to him, she's all scared, she's full of trepidation, her hands are shaking, she says to him, "How was it?" He says, it's gewaldic, it's beautiful, exactly how Mommy used to make it. So Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal, writes in his Sefer, Emes LeYaakov, he says as follows. What is the Mishnah getting telling us? The Mishnah is telling us a symbolic warning, a litmus test to discern when a marriage is in disrepair. If a man tastes burnt soup that his loving wife cooked, and he is repulsed by it. So then Rabbi Yaakov says he's actually missing the true love the Torah requires for a marriage. Rabbi Akiva, who was separated from his wife for 24 years when he studied Torah, declared that if a man finds a woman who he thinks is better, then his marriage actually needs scrutiny as worthy of dissolution. Why? That is because a person must think there is nothing tastier than what his wife prepares. And there's no one more beautiful than the woman he married. She gave him his life. Look at Mario Levine, they always say, right? The famous story, our foot is hurting us, right? The Mishnah is not defining how to get divorced. That's easy. The Mishnah is teaching us an attitude that defines love. Because love, what is it? Love is believing the soup is delicious, even when it's burnt. To understand, this person gave their life for you. Why is it burnt? Because she's taking care of your children. Rabbi Akiva is telling us a Moedik Yisrael. It can't be something nicer. It can't be something better. This is the person who gave their life to you. This is called changing perceptions. The Mishnah over here in Gittin basically took idea and changed perception of people about what the whole concept of a marriage is. So, if you look at Rabbi Akiva and the whole story of Rabbi Akiva and his wife, the whole thing from the beginning, very interesting, because Rabbi Akiva was a person that that's a no shaykhis to learn. Right? Here's a man. He's 40 years old. He's a shepherd. He knows nothing. He's Amoritz. He comes from Geirim. Right? He's older, not almost old enough to be the grandfather, right, of this girl. She's 17 years old. She's beautiful. She is the daughter of the richest man in Judea. Everyone wants to marry her. And one day this girl comes to her father and she says to him, "Daddy, I met the man of my dreams." And he says, who'd you meet? Was it the Kohen Gadol's son who came to our house? She says, "No, he's a shepherd. One of the shepherds." "Which shepherd?" "You know, the one who's 40 years old. He's bald. He's the son of Gerim. He knows nothing. He's the one." And the father says, "How could this be?" And again, we know he wasn't protesting mitzad the fact they had a problem with the person. But the fact, like later when he comes to Rabbi Akiva in the famous showdown, and he says to Rabbi Akiva, "Why did you be a matan neder?" Rabbi Akiva says to him, "If you would have known that this person would learn, would you have made the neder?" And he said, "No, even if just a little bit of learning." So it wasn't coming from a place of small-mindedness. So how could I marry? My table is a table of Talmidei Chachamim. How could I let my daughter marry someone like this? But I like to call what Rabbi Akiva and what Rachel possessed something called 4D glasses. The concept of having glasses which allow you to look through walls. Allows you to look to places that other people don't see. Example. Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara tells us about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was living at a time when there was a person that Rome sent to Judea, Tornus Rufus, who hated Rabbi Akiva. He was his nemesis. And he wanted to discredit him. And he wanted to put him in a compromising situation. Now today, in the advent of the internet, all one needs to do, type in a few things, send it out, and everybody knows this person's a bad person, whether they are or they're not. But back then it was a little harder. And Tornus Rufus says, what am I going to do? I want to mess up Rabbi Akiva. So what does he do? He decides to send a woman to Rabbi Akiva. It's going to discredit him. Who does he send? He sends his wife, Rufina. She was known as one of the most beautiful women of the generation. He sends her to Rabbi Akiva, and she comes to Rabbi Akiva, and right away Rabbi Akiva knows what she's doing there. He knows what she wants. And he does three things, the Gemara says. He laughs, he cries, and he spits on the ground. Now, she got very shaken. She was not used to this kind of a reaction. And she said, why'd you do that? He said, I'll tell you two things. I won't tell you three. He says, I cried because I looked at your beauty. And he said, whoa, this beauty that one day is going to be in the ground, and the worms are going to eat it up. And I spit on the ground because you're disgusting. Look at you. But he wouldn't tell her why he left. And then why he tells us, you know why he left? Because he knew, he saw 4D glasses, 4D vision. That one day, Rachel, after she was Nifta young, she was Niftaris young, and this lady is going to be Megayer, she's going to become a Giyaris. This lady who came here, put him in a compromising situation, but she's going to become, and she's going to marry Rabbi Akiva. And he knew this, and the Gemara tells us many, many Yesodus about Rabbi Akiva and the way he looked at things. And the famous Gemara Makkos, Rabbi Akiva the Chachamim, that sums up his vision. Right? Everyone's crying, Rabbi Akiva's laughing. Why is he laughing? Because he sees what everyone else doesn't see. But how's a man like Rabbi Akiva going to go from being a shepherd who hates Tamid HaChachamim to the point that he tells his Tamidim, when I was in Amoritz, I wanted to bite Tamid HaChachamim like a wild duck. And he said, why like a wild duck and not like a dog? He said, because a dog just bites the person. But a wild donkey cracks the bone. And I hated Tamid HaChachamim because I want to crack their bone. How does a man like that go from being an Amoritz who wants to crack the bones of the Tamid HaChachamim to becoming the Rabban Shel Yisrael of 24, the Rebbe of 24,000, and then five who are going to change the world? How does that happen? And how does a young girl look at someone and say, I know this man's going to be the Gadol Hadar, and marry him, even though I'll, on the face of it, it doesn't make any sense. But she saw, and it was as if there were no sphakas whatsoever. When she looked at him, she knew that this person was going to be the greatest person ever. And Chazal tells us, imagine after all these years, Rabbi Akiva comes back, and there he comes after 12 years, and he comes in, and he's standing by the... And I don't have any proof of this. I don't have any raya. But I have no doubt that the moment that his wife was standing in the kitchen, and she was telling that neighbor, I would be happy for him to go back to learn again. I have no doubt she knew that he was standing outside the window listening to the conversation. There's no doubt in my mind that she was thinking to herself, how come he never came home? I'm sure she wasn't doubting this. She knew he was outside the window, and she knew that he heard her, and that he went back to Yeshiva. That's what she wanted, because 12 years doesn't equal 24. Without the break, with the break, he would have never become Rabbi Akiva. So he goes back, and finally, he's coming home after 24 years, right? 24 years, 24,000 Talmidim. Here he comes, and it reminds me of when I picture the scene of him coming home after 20, and he's at the head of... It's like when Rav Nassim Zvifiko was nifter, from yeshiva all the way to the beginning of Yerushalayim, it's full of Talmidim. It's something like that. That's the kind of scene it was. Just an endless scene of Talmid Chachamim. And here she hears, that's it, he's coming home. And she says, this is the fulfillment of her dream. This is it. And she goes running outside, and Chazal tells us what happened. She's running through them, and she throws herself down at his feet. You have to understand, this is it. This is what she saw all those years ago where she wasn't in doubt. Everybody else said, you're crazy. But she had no doubts. She never had a doubt. She knew then. It was as if somebody says to you, here, pay $1 million to pick lottery numbers. And you, in 20 years, you know the answer. And you got vindicated because you're number one. And she throws herself down at his feet. And the Talmidim pushed her away. And again, I think from the fact that Talmidim pushed her away in a brusque way, they threw her to the side. And Chazal don't have to tell us that. Chazal don't have to tell us that they threw it to the side. Chazal don't tell us that one of the Talmidim was walking and tripped on his shoelace. Why do they tell us this? Why did Chazal tell us that they pushed her? The answer is, they're telling us something about the Talmidim. We all have questions, why they all died. They're telling us something, it's very important. They don't have to tell us this. There's no reason to, they're telling us, they're making a point. There's something going on over here with these Talmidim. Why they did it is a different issue. I'm not going to go into that right now. But I'm talking about somebody who had no suffix from the beginning. She had no suffix of who Rabbi Akiva was going to be. She had no suffix. It's an amazing thing. More than he knew, she knew. So let's go back to the idea that we started with. Let's go back to the ants. The ants, they toil and work, they collect and forage, they schlep and they grow and they save and they put away more than they can possibly eat if they live for 6,000 years. Why do they do that? So the answer the Medrash tells us is because of the ants' secret ambition. Medrash Rab B'Shoftim, the ants' secret ambition. Some part of the ants have a secret consideration. Something incredible is going through their tiny minds. Sure, they know their place in the overall scheme of things. That they have very small stomachs, and they max out at a kernel and a half. However, a small part of the ant's brain has a secret dream, a hope, a suffix, a doubt, that maybe Hashem will change the way things work around here, and that instead of remaining ant size forever, maybe all ants will morph into the size of people. They'll be huge ants, and they're going to need more food to satisfy themselves. Therefore, due to this chashash, this tiny suffix, the ants save as much as they can. How does this apply to us? We too live our lives. We save, mechishbonus, I need this amount of mitzvahs, I need this amount of wheat kernels, right? And yet, here the ant proves much smarter than we. He saves and saves more than he can ever consume. On the off chance, things will change, and he'll need more food. Right? And we, what do? We content ourselves sometimes with the minimum, right? We don't know, we don't understand whatever, boy. So we say, we'll collect this, we'll collect that. We're happy, we're good, we're content. The ant goes and collects more than he can use for 6,000 years. Great for the ant. On a suffix, great for the ant. What about us who know we're going to Olam HaBa? On a vadai, that there's a next world. Why don't we learn from the ant? Shalom Elch tell us. Go to the ant and Hakem, become wise. Look at him on an off chat on a suffix. Look what he's doing. Shouldn't we learn from him? On a vadai, right? Maybe Olam HaBa is 100% different from our perceptions. And we're going to need millions of more kernels. Why do we take the chance of coming along empty handed? Are the ants really that much smarter than us? That's the big question. Are the ants really that much smarter than us? And that's why Rabbeinu Yoina, in Shari Tshuva, he brings a third section that talks about mitzvahs haseh, mitzvahs lois haseh, the middle of Tshuva. Because once a person has done Teshuva, he now starts looking at mitzvahs in a whole different light. As kernels of wheat to grab and gather and savor and enjoy and love and put aside for the long winter months and when the world lies fallow. And there are no kernels to gather. Rabbeinu Yoni says, when we come to the realization of what mitzvahs are, mitzvahs I say, mitzvahs lays I say, the next obvious step is, right? The next obvious step is putting aside. It's coming to, we change our perception. Mitzvahs. So now, we can answer the question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a tain on us, Major Tanchuma. Right? He says to us, why don't you be proactive? How come you don't start things off? You only put a mezuzah on your house after I give you a house. Of course. What does he want from us? The answer is, that once we change our perceptions, and everything that we do is about mitzvahs. Once we've gone through tshuva, and now all we want is to do mitzvahs. So then anything that comes our way, we look at it with a different perception. Money that comes our way is looked at as a chance to give meiser. Shabbos is looked our way as a chance to light a Shabbos candle. Brachas, everything is a food that comes over is a chance to make a bracha. Our perception has changed. Obviously, it's still going to be in response to what we get. But where's our perception? What's our focus? What's our goal? Is it about getting the money and now we say, oh, we have money, so we take ma'aser? Or I'm so happy I have money because now I can take ma'aser. That's why I'm happy. What's our perception? What's our focus? Imagine Chum is saying, if we would come with the focus that we're happy that we have the thing because now we do the mitzvah, that's what the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. That's considered proactive. Because that's basically the idea of Lech Elena Malach HaKeh. Rabbi Akiva had the vision. His wife had the vision. She didn't have a suffix. She knew from the beginning what she wanted. She had no suffix. The ants, many svikas. We have a little suffix because we don't know what Olam Haba is going to be about. But on the other side, we're a vadai. Because we know there is Olam Haba. There's no shaila to us. There's another world coming. Our only shaila is what the makeup of the world is going to be. What are we going to need? What are going to be our tzrochim in the next world? Based on this is the yisoid. Shalom Melech. Leich elen amavcha kem. If the ant can gather on a small suffix and gather so much, kal v'chaymeh to us to go and gather as much as we can so that when we get to Olam Haba, we'll have what we need. Because that's it. It's over. We get to the place where we can never collect anymore. We have as much as we can. So we all be zeichet to use Kabbalah Satayr to gather as much wheat kernels as we can for the coming months, the coming years. And shezeichet mekabel Torah the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to.